Well, hi, everybody. I know we're all a minute or so early. I appreciate the responses of those of you who have sent responses to those questions that I asked. Those are very helpful for me to know what will be most useful to you, and I'll use those to incorporate in some of my discussion. So I appreciate that very much. Are there any other responses now to the couple of questions? What's the most important thing that you want to have addressed during this series? And for your benefit, what would be the best takeaway 4 weeks from now? Anybody want to add something to that, or if you haven't seen the email yet, to respond to either or both of those questions?
Yes, hi, my name is Willie. I actually didn't see the email for those questions.
What would be most helpful?
Well, what would be most helpful for me is, because I'm a relationship and marriage coach, so to be able to help my clients with stress management and just be able to provide them with other strategies and creating roadmaps when they're stuck. Like one of my clients today, he's actually has a very serious victim mentality. So just to be able to help him with that and just learning some strategies towards stress and things like that.
That's helpful to know. Thanks very much. Yes. Who else? Anyone else want to respond to either of those questions?
This is Michael Kraft. I was just joining the call.
Welcome. Hey. What would you most like us to focus on or take away in this series?
You know, I'm just in the middle of the Coach Training Center training program, and so I'm exploring my niche and just looking at peak performance and stress management. It's just an overall foundation for the coaching that I'm entering into.
Okay, well, terrific. I hope each of you have seen the downloads, the two different downloads to print the outline. It's a fairly annotated outline of the four seminars that we're going to do on stress mastery and peak performance. And there's a resource guide that has some exercises and a bit more in some areas that I think might be beneficial. Be sure that you see both of those and download and print those so that you can take notes maybe on the outline so that you don't have to write as much and can pay more attention to see if this makes sense to you. So I'm going to reserve a bit of time at the beginning of each of the four seminars and a little bit at the end if there are any clarifications or questions that you have or anything you want to add or ask about what we talked about. I'll go on lecture mode in just a moment so that you don't have to worry about the background noise, but thank you for managing the background noise. So let me begin with with what I would have begun with at the top of the hour. Hi, I'm Dave Kruger. I'm eager to begin this collaboration with you. I think some really important areas of both stress mastery and peak performance in terms of what we do as coaches. We're going to look at some of the latest research and application on optimum performance under pressure and some practical understanding and strategies that you can use for yourself and your clients, whether it's business, the arts, sports, and we're going to cover a range of proven stress mastery tools and peak performance strategies. So I just want to emphasize again the outline and the resource guide. And as you saw probably in the announcement, this is being recorded for online playback at that same link that you see the four ports there. It'll be up by probably in the morning where you downloaded the outline and the resource guide. So my hope is to co-create with you in this collaboration a peak experience in and of itself. So any other thing you want to add or ask before we go to lecture mode and get started? Well, thanks, and I look forward to this collaboration. If there are any questions or clarifications that you have, jot them down, and we'll have a bit of time at the end and again at the beginning. And if there are any questions we really didn't get to, fire an email to me. And if you will respond to both of those questions, I promise I'll read them, incorporate as much as possible in the discussion. It does make a difference because I use that information to inform what's going to be most useful to you. And if you think about it, those are the two questions that you use to frame your coaching sessions most likely. What would you like to focus on? What do you want to take away? That's the map that helps us look at where we are, where we're going, how to measure progress along the way, and what's detour and distraction. So we'll come back to that. So we're going to go on lecture mode. Hold on. Okay, we're going to talk in our first seminar about stress mastery strategies and tools. Here's a story to frame this. When I was in the single ski lift line at Steamboat Springs, about to advance to the chairlift, an instructor behind me had five kids all about age 5 or 6 and asked me if I would mind if two of them rode on the chairlift with me. Of course, I welcomed the opportunity. We got on the lift, and the little girl next to me had a somewhat awkward seating and seemed to slump a little bit as we were riding and talking. As we were getting closer to the end of the lift to ski out of the chair, she said in a really timid voice, "I'm scared to get off." And I said, "I understand." And I said, "Do you know who Laurie Hernandez is?" This was just after the 16 Summer Olympics, and Laurie had won a gold medal in the team event, silver on the balance team. She was all on the news. The little girl looked at me. She said, "Yeah." I asked her if she would like to know what Laurie did when she was scared about performing her gymnastics routine. And she immediately said, "Yeah." Well, I told her that Laurie did three things. She pictured herself doing a perfect routine, a vision of exactly how she was going to perform. Then the instant before she began, she would take a deep breath to breathe in relaxation, breathe out any tension, and said to herself, "I got this." Well, my new little buddy seemed interested in this and sat a little bit more upright. We were a few seconds from getting off the lift, and I asked her what she would say to herself if she got off. She said in a somewhat timid and hesitant voice, "I got this." And I nudged her. I said, "Say it like you mean it." Then, in a voice that seemed to channel all of her 5.5 years into somebody I would not want to meet in a dark alley, she said very confidently, "I got this." As she skied out of the chair perfectly, she stopped, turned around to look at me from about 10 feet away. At the same instant, we both did a 1-inch air fist bump. We both smiled, and she skied off with her instructor. And we're going to review how that is a mantra, a cue, a focus of physiology. So here's a brief overview. In the last few years, we've seen revolutionary changes in what we know about the mind and brain and performance sciences to apply new tools to engineer optimum performance. So I want to synthesize and integrate these new frontiers to help you consistently attain peak performance mentally and physically. Now, scientists, neuroscientists especially, estimate that 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. That means that the vast majority of our unconscious responses are based on already established algorithms for behavioral, emotional, attachment patterns. This operating system ghostwrites beliefs, emotions, and patterns of behavior and attachment, the shadow story operating on unconscious autopilot. Now, this is, of course, what we listen for with our clients to understand what those algorithms are. And believe it or not, there's a system to do that. A script now refers to the default mode of expectations, experiences, and responses of how we write our stories. Our expectations inform the various patterns, attachment, emotional, behavioral, that result in a typical, even stereotypical, response to certain situations. As we repeat patterns, our brains wire that as default mode. The script for each scenario in our lives operates then largely without us having to think about it consciously. It's amazingly effective that way. At a family gathering or board meeting, we tend to sit in the same seat each time. We look over the menu, but then order the same thing. Now, to deconstruct this system, to understand those algorithms of patterns of attachment relationships, performance behaviors, we have to examine this default mode, this script. Change then involves breaking the script. We can engage in self-directed neuroplasticity, which is just a fancy way to describe how we can create new behavior side by side with unlearning the old automatic behavior. The approaches to changing behavior that work also need to consider what this is doing to your personal stories. Now, as a sidebar here, as coaches, we're talking about understanding our client's story. That's our metaphor. To the client, it's not a story. It's just the way things are. Just like an unconscious bias is not conscious until you make it conscious. So if you think about this, how many of you know how to program a computer? Algorithms, pattern sequences. I just learned to turn mine on effectively about a year and a half ago. An algorithm is a finite series of steps used to solve a problem or make a decision. So I want to talk about how we can reprogram your mind software and rewire your brain. That's what we do in effective coaching. So there are two proven systems to apply to stress mastery and optimum performance. Both of these are in the outline in more detail. This is only a preface. The neuroconditioning chart is a systematic way to identify stressful emotional triggers and to rewire planned ideal responses for peak performance. Remember my little 5.5-year-old buddy. This is an application of that. And secondly, the roadmap system. The roadmap is the acronym for the 7 steps to deconstruct and understand our decisions, most of which are unconscious, and to systematically write new code for mind, brain, and behavior to perform under pressure. Now, here's a footnote on the limits of algorithms. This is from Harris County. I'm calling, and we're talking with me in Houston. Harris County Judge Emmett Smith. This is his quote. For Houston, Texas, 3 500-year floods in the 3 years means we're either free and clear for the next 1,500 years or something has seriously changed. So that's the limits of algorithm. Now, science, though, is about patterns, the fundamental laws and principles that form the foundation of our lives and our world. The brain is a pattern-seeking organ. Many of the methods to facilitate change are simply contrary to the way the mind and brain work. This is what I believe can be most useful to you in coaching, to consider this. So it's not about having all the answers. Since most of our operating system is unconscious and not directly accessible anyhow, but about having the informed framework to ask the right questions and an evidence-based system to implement strategic change for best results. In other words, to create an optimum performance story. Here is an application. When Dr. Helen Czerski was studying physics at Cambridge, she was in her grandmother's kitchen looking at textbooks and charts of quantum mechanics. Her grandmother looked at her material and said, "What can you do when you know that?" Dr. Czerski spent an expert lifetime answering her nana's question And the unspoken follow-up question she knew her Nana had and thought, but didn't say, is she waited for the answer. And why should I care? So we're about to answer Nana's two questions, spoken and unspoken. First, let's talk about several minds, two brains, and one focus. Several minds. A state of mind is like a software program that determines what we perceive, how we process information, and then how we respond. Our minds constantly monitor and interpret to give us a running account of what's happening, what it means, what to do. Each mindset is its own software system. It's complete and internally consistent. Mindsets frame the ongoing process of our operating system. Mindsets, or states of mind, include powerful beliefs that inform the stories we write about ourselves. Researchers at Norwegian University of Science and Technology recently discovered that the brain creates multiple independent maps finding its way in the world. In other words, the human brain operates like a Google map. We see or experience a certain stimulus, we boot up a map to determine what it means. So a new situation arises, different maps booted up. We have different states of mind for each of these different situations. Now, this emphasizes, I think, how important it is to understand the context and framing for different situations and to have a cohesive story to organize and direct that series of maps. State always comes first. The state of mind, which boots up a certain mindset that determines what we perceive and how we process it, and the meaning we give to it. Then strategy and story. So a state of mind boots up that software program that has predetermined meanings, connections, associations. So within a state of mind, just as within a software program, the patterns are predictable and consistent. When Susan gets angry at someone on the executive team, she will become more authoritative and demand better performance. When Robert is confronted with a challenging task, he will engage an attachment pattern to get someone to make a decision that he'll sign off on. This systematic approach to breaking the script, our job description, directly addresses the default mode of algorithms that are played out in relationships, behaviors, and emotions that may not be working as well, or the software was tailor-made to an earlier situation and time, and it simply has become outdated. To revise the story, we first have to understand the script and then have a systematic way to address change, to recognize and own the process, to assess what to do differently, and to create a systematic way of change. The initial step of perturbation of the default mode, in other words, something that's not working or that we perturbate that system, makes someone uncomfortable because this is breaking the script and those automatic responses that follow. A default mode, the script, has its own continuity, and we feel comfortable when things are certain. Now, never mind that they may be limiting, and we repeat, which gives us the illusion of effectiveness, but that repetition can be limiting, and we're uncomfortable with change when we activate new processes that are different and disrupt that default mode. But that's how we learn. We don't learn when we follow the script and it works. To say that a different way, some of you have heard me say this repeatedly. If you want to change, don't just focus on the goal. Most people have the same goal. Winners and losers have the same goal. Focus on the system. That's what we bring to coaching, to co-create a map. A stimulus, such as a memory, a thought, a person, or place, can instantly shift our attention. Once we focus on the stimulus, it boots up a state of mind that then determines how we perceive and process everything that follows, just like a software program on the computer. Now, the two crucial elements in performance, become how to boot up an optimum mindset and then how to develop fully the skills within that mindset for the best results. Performance practice and performance flow. To enhance capacity and performance requires deliberate practice and systematic execution for peak performance. We're going to examine both of these in detail in Seminar 3. The brain rewires by focused attention on two things, possibilities and new experiences. The repetition of those new experiences then can encode new learning in neural circuitry. So here's an application and hopefully practical coaching language of this idea. Surface and shadow stories. The surface story, remember, only 5 or 10% of our operating system acts consciously. The surface story is our usually logical, conscious intention and aspiration. This is what I want. These are my goals. The shadow story that actually ghostwrites behaviors from that 90 to 95% of our operating system is automatic and unconscious. And it may include beliefs like, well, I can't really get what I want, or the system keeps me from doing what I want. When the surface story are limiting assumptions, I need to have more experience to do, I need to be confident before I start. So we're listening also for limiting assumptions in our clients. When the surface and shadow stories go in opposite directions, stuckness can result. The surface story and the shadow story express the desire and the obstacle simultaneously. An example, the surface story sees money as security, freedom, pleasure, or worth, depending on the individual, but the same brain may be wired to link it to the shadow story of greed or evil or selfishness. Or a simple example of that surface story. I want to generate more income and create wealth. Now, the shadow story may count it. Well, I don't think I have what it takes, or I wasn't born to have money, or what if I try my best and don't do it? Those two go in opposite directions and can create a stuckness. We want one thing but may unconsciously do something else. An inhibition is often the expression of a conflict between the surface and the shadow story, simply in an attempt to avoid conflict or the discomfort of that conflict, or simply the trepidation of doing something new and different. Inhibition then becomes the cure for that conflict, or we may rationalize it. For example, when your client does something new and different, it will always be with some experience of uncertainty or trepidation, because this is the brain's job description. You're doing something new, so it reads as discomfort. This is important to help the client recognize that as a validation of moving ahead, not to frame it as validation of doing something wrong, like danger, better head for cover, or even misreading it as, this discomfort is my gut telling me I'm not doing the right thing, or my intuition says this is not quite right, so I think I'll stop. And stopping always ends the discomfort. The biggest obstacle that keeps us from having what we want is the story that we create about why we can't have what we want. I can't find the time. I'm not sure it would be worth it. I may not know what to do. So let's look at two brains. We've looked at, or looked at several minds. Let's look now at two brains. We have two essentially independent brain operating systems with competing interests, trying to balance urges with logical reasons. The most pressing conflict is not between us and the rest of the world, but between our two brain systems. We want to save for the future, yet we enjoy spending money on a purchase now. We want to be healthy. Yeah, but we want that strawberry topped cheesecake. The balance can be tipped by adding extra strawberry topping at times. So we write two stories simultaneously that, if they go in opposite direction, is not a metaphor, but it's brain chemistry. One example is the reward center of the brain, the nucleus accumbens, releases the pleasure chemical dopamine with anticipation of a purchase. The pain center of the brain, the insula, responds when we have to part with our money to pay. So what's a remedy for that? The credit card people know this. Buy now and pay later. You separate the two. Now, the bottom-up system runs automatically on impressions and feelings. This is from the midbrain. It's immediate and intuitive. This subcortical circuitry, this unconscious system, notifies the neocortex, the brain's frontal topmost area, from below. So bottom-up is our impulses, our habits, our reflexive attention. It's automatic, quick, impulsive, and it requires focus and strategies to develop a self-awareness and deliberate planning, not to just automatically and intuitively respond. The bottom-up system operates automatically and can't be turned off at will. This makes errors of intuitive and emotional origin even difficult to predict. And how do you talk about it with clients? We're going to address all of this. The top-down system two is the conscious logical seat of self-control, executive functioning and reasoning. This is the conscious logical brain. We often oversimplify it by saying this is the left prefrontal cortex. The top-down system determines voluntary attention and choice, the consideration and deliberation of decision-making. Now, when the bottom-up system prevails, decisions shift more toward impulsivity, overspending, overborrowing, overeating. Other addictive habits can occur without conscious regulation or direction, or when it's charged with certain emotion. A particularly challenging problem is the presence of unconscious biases that we pre-programmed into the bottom-up system without conscious awareness by our top-down system. An awareness now, and this is a coaching application, an awareness of the factors which lower a threshold to resilience against impulsivity becomes important to recognize and build in our work with clients. Now, willpower is simply a triumph of the top over the bottom system. Willpower means we stay focused on our goals despite the urges of impulses and passions. But willpower can be influenced by a number of variables that can deplete it. Stress, sustained mental effort, even low glucose. To Nana's question, why should you care? It's all crucial for deliberate practice, skill development, and optimum performance. That's why. So now let's look at one focus. A pro tennis player was having an outstanding season in her career. We met just before she left for Wimbledon, where she was one of the top seeds. She was having a particular difficulty in very recent time with her serve. Her usual powerful, flawless serve was a little bit strained, and she wanted to figure this out before she left. I asked her to take us detailed frame by frame through her usual flow pattern of serve, something she would never do because you don't think about it. You get in that performance zone and do it. But for this instance, to look at frame by frame, then to describe what she was experiencing and seeing now that was different. When she got to the point of tossing the ball in the air, she had an instantaneous flash of her coach looking at her critically because of something he had said a number of days ago. This literal nanosecond of moving from the flow state of that automatic performance zone and flow, the motor memory of the procedural process, derailed that well-grooved pattern. When she instantly and almost imperceptibly moved from this automatic flow to think about it for a moment, her performance was off. So we then had to figure out a way to get back into that performance flow, not to think about it for a moment. Yogi Berra put it most simply. He said, you can't think and hit at the same time. So any instant of thinking about something disrupts that performance flow. Think about it in your coaching. If you remember back to the beginning, when you had these questions, you would pause for a moment to wonder, perhaps, what's the best question I can ask now? Or I wonder if that's the same thing that indicates needing to get back in the flow of that contingent response and the immersion in that conversation. Now, the power is in the focus. The unconscious mind does not distinguish positive versus negative or even recognize future or past, but focuses only on the here and now. This is the power of selective attention. The brain works like a camera. Out of all the possibilities, what you choose to focus on determines the awareness and aligns the energy field for attention, the energy field of your brain. Attention holds the key to choice architecture. Attention serves to regulate emotion and thereby the state of mind that's chosen for a task. So successful performance execution depends on directing and sustaining focus to a specific choice and ignoring others. This is the beauty of focus. When you focus on one thing, when you ask your client at the beginning of it, what would you like us to focus on? All the things that are not that focused, you don't pay any attention to. Same with a map. When you establish where you are, where you're going, all the things, all the places not from where you are to where you're going, you don't pay attention to it. Here's an application of that, a kind of a practical application. My wife gifted both of us with enrollment in the BMW Racing School in Greenville, South Carolina for an anniversary. It was a fascinating and masterful application of performance science as we went through the various aspects of driving challenges with pro racers for 3 days. One of the early basics they taught us was how to navigate sharp turns and curves at high speed. Since our brains follow our eyes, when we look at where we want to go, we create a successful turn even under pressure. Focus. If we look at the obstacle we want to avoid, our brain follows our eyes there too, and we get what we focus on. Focus on avoiding the obstacle, and you'll regularly hit it. When a coach focuses on what not to do with players, let's say a sports coach, it becomes a prelude to a choke. An individual getting analytical, especially self-critical, disrupts the flow of that bottom-up system to move outside the zone to become an observer with the prefrontal cortex, like my client who in a second thought of her coach and it disrupted her flow. The most fundamental principle is one we know quite well from neuroscience and quantum physics. You get what you focus on, not what you want. So look at where you want to go from the next curve, also to 20 years from now. Michael Phelps, the most decorated Olympian with 22 medals, including 18 golds, described the significance of focus. When I'm focused, there's not one single thing, person, anything that can stand in my way of doing something. If I want something bad enough, I'm going to get there. New neuronal networks and pathways are created when you focus on destination, on solutions. The already existing circuitry is further etched when you focus on existing problems, even if you're trying to solve them. This is why people get stuck in therapy or simply in etching problems further. This offers explanation at a brain level for why solution focus is more effective than a problem focus. The brain connections literally become mind maps and subsequently influence the reality that we see. We mold our brain pathways and connections by what we focus on. A simple example is that rather than focusing on obstacles that hold us back, to refocus on things that move us forward and the positive connections. When we focus and when we frame, this is a basic tool that we have in coaching, and one of our clients starts talking about problems or obstacles, if we immediately refocus, what's the challenge or what's the opportunity? Instead of going down an already existing pathway, we're looking at the choice architecture of now and next, of creating a new neural connection and pathway which activates the brain in a new way. So let's talk for just a bit about regulating states of mind and managing emotions. Now, as we've already discussed, a state of mind is like a software program, a set of particular emotions, memories, mental models, behavioral patterns. A key element of mastery is to become aware of the various states of mind with a particular focus on what state works best for what purpose. Now, a challenge is to regulate states of mind regardless of the emotional triggers or charged situations. It's the most important variable to determine successful performance of any type, athletic, intellectual, artistic. The state of mind determines the meaning you attach. The meaning determines behavior. So here's what we know now. A gap in performance has more to do with mindset even than motivation and intelligence or skill or ability. When a performer in any endeavor, athlete, surgeon, executive, has practiced essentially the same thousands of hours as the next person, optimum outcome is determined more by specific mental state for optimum performance. Here are some factors we know that lower the threshold to emotional triggers that can predispose toward a state shift or compromised performance. Preset meanings like unconscious biases, depleted energy, distraction, emotional overwhelm, too many choices, significant emotional charge or even specific emotional triggers, or immediately after experiencing ineffectiveness or powerlessness. One example of this kind of influence is how even significantly depleted energy can cause people to fall back to an earlier mode of thinking and deciding. This is a study reported in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. 8 parole judges were studied for 3 years for their decision-making regarding applications granted for parole. The average rate of granting parole was 35%. The exact time, though, that each decision was studied in relation to the judge's 3 food breaks made a difference. After each meal, morning, lunch, and afternoon food, after each meal, 65% of requests were granted. Just before noon, just before the end of the day when blood glucose was lowest, their approval rate dropped to almost 0%. At these times of low blood glucose and greater fatigue, they resorted to more critical and judgmental thinking. I'll give you an application if we have time in discussion about how I applied that recently with a decision-making process of a financial professional. So this is something that I think can be important to remember. As few as 20% of people have a flow experience on a daily basis. 15% of people never really experience flow at all. So in this flow zone, in this performance zone, we are most likely to perform at our best. We learn better. It's a state of mind that we get into. We're going to talk about this and more of how to do it and what it means in an application in coaching. But to get into a performance zone for deliberate practice in the same state of mind as the performance itself. And it's not just optimal performance in sports, but any area of functioning, executive, parenting, flow is a very specific state of mind for remaining absolutely in the present moment to access and sustain optimum performance. Highest performance is within that state of flow to direct and channel skills, creativity, and training in the present moment. Here's a simple example. One pro athlete I work with came to incorporate and apply everything we've just talked about in regulating states of mind and entering and sustaining that performance flow in his all-star career. After every play in a game, this was a football player, which is more episodic. It's not the same flow like in basketball or in swimming or other sport. It's episodic. You do a play, and then there's a pause. And you may not be much involved in the next play, but the next play, somebody's coming right at you. So it's about getting and sustaining that performance flow. After every play, just before the next play began, he would say to himself, reset. Now, he knew that in order not to have an excitement or disappointment carry over to affect the next play, he had to reset. It was his way of re-engaging that grounded and centered state of mind to have access to all of his skill for optimum performance. Any disruptive emotion after a big win or a big loss or disappointment or even a major happening can hijack attention and disrupt flow. So we need a way to manage emotions and regulate states of mind at all times. So I want to look with you now at the neuroconditioning chart. Look at that in your outline. This, it's on page 14 of your outline. It's not in the ordered sequence. I want to tell you how I initially developed it, which I think is a way to give you an illustration for coaching purposes. A client I'll call Barbara began one of our coaching sessions. She was a very high-functioning executive. We had spent much of our time looking at her executive function. She paused to say she wanted to move to a personal focus because the upcoming Thanksgiving holidays with her family were a challenge. She had mentioned a pattern that each time she goes home to her family, usually for one major holiday a year, this year Thanksgiving, she notices the same issue. And she kind of described this with some embarrassment. We have a big family gathering where my parents, brother, sister, their families all come together for a holiday weekend, usually 3 days. I resolve, I commit that before I leave, this time is going to be different. I will not get into arguments or struggles with my parents and brother and sister. I focus intently. She was 51 or 2 at the time. I will not get into arguments or struggles. I'll focus intensely on being balanced and not getting upset. I can usually last most of the first day, and then something happens and I lose it. I get in a fight with somebody in the family, and then it escalates and I fight with everybody, and we're at a standoff for the rest of the holiday time. Well, remember, state comes before strategy and story. I've reflected how frustrating this must be for her to want an enjoyable holiday with her family and how upsetting it was for her when this was not the case, and she wholeheartedly agreed. I first asked her, at the time you're in the middle of that upset and in arguments with them, what's the age of that conversation? What was her experience? She immediately needed no explanation and said, early adolescence, I'm 13 or 14, instantly and totally at that time, and I'm stuck there for the rest of the visit. She described a state change. I asked her specifically what she was aware of that triggered her reactions. And to speak very specifically, as much as she could recognize, she described a particular look from her dad, a word from her mother that set her off, a gesture from her brother that dated back to before that time that would instantly create that state change. And this was just the beginning. I recommended that she schedule a time with herself, an appointment with herself to do brainstorming, at least 20 or 30 minutes, no interruptions, no distractions, that she could reflect on a new plan. And this is where column one. I asked her to write down each of the emotional triggers that she was aware of with each member of her family. And I emphasized that she remained grounded and centered while she was doing this, not to let it become a trigger and get upset or disrupt in that focus. I suggested then that for each emotional trigger in her column one, that she put alongside in column two, what is your usual response, your thought or feeling or behavior? This column two was the instantly altered state of mind that had thoughts, feelings, behaviors, negative self-talk that were her automatic reaction. This column two was her age 13 time capsule. I then suggested that she schedule another brainstorming session with herself on another day, at least one in between, when she would think about two things. A mantra to get centered and present for each emotional trigger. It may be the same mantra for all of them. Column three. Now, a mantra is three parts. A cue to initiate the process, and Barbara used the cue of touching her ring. It was not something she wanted to announce to her family. This was between her and her. A focus phrase to align the energy field of her brain. And then a physiology such as a deep breath for relaxation. And remember my little skiing buddy. It was a visualization, a focus phrase, and a deep breath. Each emotional trigger deserves its own pairing for an ideal response. So this was the fourth column. What is your ideal response for each emotional trigger to proactively pre-plan what she was going to do? This is striking while the iron's cold, to pre-plan this so that she could logically and consciously think about it. She sent me her initial draft of the four columns. And I emphasize that the purpose of the first two columns was to cue her radar to recognize not only the triggers, column one, but also the resultant state change and the content of that state, column two, as much as possible, just to cue her radar to use this to get grounded and centered more quickly. In other words, to move to column three, to use that mantra to get grounded and centered, then engage in her ideal response, and to practice this, and to remember that she could call a timeout. She didn't have to do this all at once. She could get up from the table and go to the bathroom. She could take a walk. She could call a timeout. This was not the NBA. She had an unlimited number of timeouts. In our first session after the Thanksgiving holiday, I was really eager to hear how it went. She immediately began the session by saying it was the best holiday she'd ever had with her family. There were times of challenge, even times when she would excuse herself to just go to the next room to get grounded and centered in order to engage the behavior that she really wanted. She was immensely pleased with her work, as I was for her. So here's a brief review of these steps of the neuroconditioning chart. Column one, the emotional triggers. This is to identify consciously the emotional trigger that has a disruptive automatic state change that you can't change the external cue. Barbara could not change what her family did, but she could change her response to it to not make it triggering so that she came to connect a different behavior first, getting grounded and centered instead of a reactive mode that was getting immersed in column two in that state. So certain emotional triggers have the impact of creating an instant state change to re-enter that earlier state. And immediately on entry, everything's the same as it was when that state was first formed. It's a time capsule. By definition, it won't change. You have the same negative self-talk, the same impulsive response. all the feelings, associations, perceptions, anxiety, frustration, they're all part of that time capsule. The state change only takes a nanosecond, and it's so imperceptible it becomes invisible. These sometimes decades-old patterns of thought and feelings and behavior have not changed since that time capsule. It will always be the same inside it. That's why therapy of re-entering and catharsis, or that's why sometimes it makes it worse, but it doesn't really help. Here's the key point. It immediately seems like the content, the trigger, the messages, the self-talk create this state rather than it being a result of this state. The result is column two. It's not the cause of it. So it's as if the story we tell ourselves about who we are really are becomes who we really are, our core identity, our reality. And it's hard to distinguish the stories of the situation from the situation itself. Now, here's a little bit of an elaboration about column three. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach, Roger Reed, arrived, his team ranked 217th in free throw percentage, lowest in their division nationwide, 217 out of 217 teams. Now, during practice, he had his players develop a mantra before each free shot. He suggested the cue be two dribbles, and then a very brief phrase that they would say to themselves, combined with a deep breath, breathing in relaxation, breathing out of any tension. This took 3 to 5 seconds. And the phrase was, he gave the example, but wanted each person to do it himself, relaxed and smooth. So they dribbled, had the focus phrase to align the energy field of their brain, and the deep breath for relaxation of their body. Then he would also simulate a real game situation, suddenly blowing the whistle in practice, going to the line, shooting two free throws. If they made both, they got a break. If they didn't, they had a lap. So this simulated actual performance. In 2 years, the team was ranked number one in their division nationwide. Now, the column four, ideal response. For each emotional trigger, have a pre-planned ideal response, including behavior. This pre-planning simplifies the process to move immediately into an ideal behavior rather than having to plan after it gets regulated and grounded. For my little buddy, it was to picture herself successfully skiing out of the chair. The repetition of these four steps, when you do it again and again, will result in neural conditioning. Your brain is rewired. Now, the flow across all four columns brings conscious recognition of an emotional trigger that's otherwise instantaneously, maybe conscious or not, but it creates a state change to an old state of mind with all its inherent feelings, behaviors, and beliefs. So, in summary then, column one and column two, the emotional trigger and usual response, are simply to recognize more quickly an emotional trigger and the state change that it immediately induces. It's coding your radar to recognize. It's not focusing on the negative, but cueing your radar to recognize it more quickly. And like a time capsule, the content of column two will not change. You can't think, reason, feel, figure, or therapize your way out of a state of mind. You need to get grounded and centered and create a more balanced experience to then enter a state that is more productive. So rather than getting lost in the content of the state, which is so common to do, and for us as coaches as well with our clients, instead address the process by getting grounded and centered to move then to a pre-planned ideal response for each emotional trigger. Now, as you do this repeatedly, you'll notice two things. The first is that as you repeat your mantra of the cue, focus, phrase, and physiology, like a deep breath, you'll notice over time that simply the cue alone will be sufficient to induce instantly that deep, grounded, centered state. You won't have to go through that process, even if it's just a few seconds, to do the focus phrase in physiology each time. This is the first phase of neural conditioning. You've rewired your brain to use an automatic cue to induce a state that's more optimum. As you move through all four steps to immediately engage an ideal response, when you repeat this enough, it will rewire your brain. So what was a cue for derailing and a state change will be a cue ultimately for that ideal behavior. You've rewired your brain. The initial emotional trigger can be coupled with a balanced state of mind and the ideal response. In other words, the trigger won't be triggering, but a cue for an ideal behavior, a default optimum behavior. Now, this is the hard work miracle. Your brain has rewired its operating system. And elite performers in business, sports, the arts, know how to live the wisdom that the more enjoyable the experience, the better the performance will be. My favorite grandmother said it very simply. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. So, in our next seminar, we're going to talk about the neuroscience of peak performance, including confidence, mindfulness, deliberate practice, and unlearning. I'm going to go off of lecture mode, if you'll manage the background noise, to see if there are clarifications, questions, or additions. We're in discussion mode. Any thoughts, questions, or clarifications from anyone?
This is Christy.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
It really opened my eyes when you were talking, when you said getting stuck in therapy. Because in therapy, you are concentrating on the problem versus, you know, looking for the future, towards the future. But how you put it, it just like, I really like how you put that.
Well, you put it, if I'm identifying you correctly, you already beat me there because you put it in your email, and it sounds like the concept of your coaching business, Be Well Designs. Is that accurate? You got it already. We're just talking about how you got there.
So. Like, there you go. There it is.
Okay. Thank you for adding that. Any thoughts or questions? Anyone? I'm eager to hear how this is. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is great. I do have a question. You mentioned that, was it column 3, where, like, I just want a bit of clarification on how to do that. You said something like, if you practice enough, just the cue is enough to activate that, you know, optimal or that
okay,
ideal
that,
response.
Okay, let me clarify. Column 3 mm-hmm. is the mantra, the cue, the focus, the physiology.
Mm-hmm.
The,
mm-hmm.
the two dribbles, the focus phrase, and mm-hmm. then the deep breath. That creates a grounded, centered state. When
mm-hmm.
then you do an ideal or optimum behavior, such as shooting a free throw, such as
mm-hmm.
Barbara being grounded and centered, when you do that enough, the initial cue, whatever that is, for Barbara it was her dad rolling her eye, then
mm-hmm.
that going through the process to an optimum response
mm-hmm.
for her was reframing it to look at their immediate discussion. When you do that enough, when you do the cue, the focus, the physiology enough, and couple that initial trigger, instead of it being triggering for state change, it can more automatically go to an ideal or optimum behavior. So going across all four columns is what an ultimate result is that doing it again and again can rewire the brain, the neural conditioning. Does that make it a little bit clearer?
Yes. So basically, do repeat those four columns.
Yes, the process of going through that and going from the initial trigger instead to get grounded and centered and have an ideal behavior, when you do that enough, it will hardwire that new behavior to be the default mode instead of it being triggering where you get lost in that time capsule of column two.
Okay. And then do we how often do we do that? Like, because that's very triggering if we just, like, relive that. So
I'm not clear. When you say how often, can you ask that again, please?
So those four steps. So, yes, we want to bring back the trigger and then practice the mantra, the cues, focus, and the physiology, and then practice, you know, the ideal response. Do we kind of skip column two when we do that repetition of practice?
No, you don't skip it. What I recommended for Barbara was to do it in two steps, to look at the usual triggers and what the usual behavior or response was, column one and column two, to come back a second time and look at how she wanted to use a mantra, a cue, a focus, a physiology to get grounded and to create an ideal response or behavior to each of the emotional triggers. And so that each time that there was an emotional trigger, she had a way of getting grounded and centered and moving more quickly each time into an ideal behavior. That's what rewires the brain. The process is doing it immediately, but then over time it will rewire the brain. But each time you have to focus on those steps until it becomes more automatic.
Okay.
So I hope that makes a bit more sense. I know we're out of time. If there are still things that aren't quite clear, let's pick up at the beginning next time with that, and feel free to fire off an email. And again, I'm interested for those of you who haven't responded in what you most would like to focus on and take away from our discussion, and especially when you look at the outline, maybe even look at the resources section and do some of the exercises yourself to see if any of those might benefit you, and then applying that to working with a particular client. So thanks for your attendance and enthusiasm and energy. I appreciate it. I really look forward to resuming this collaboration and talking more about, I think, this really important subject with you. So till next week, take good care of yourself. See you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.